Translation and Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Śrīla Prabhupāda, Śrīla Prabhupāda ki jai. My dear King Prasinabharisat, in this way, King Puranjana, with his heart full of lust and sinful reactions, began to enjoy sex with his wife, and in this way his new life and youth expired in half a moment. Purport. Śrīla Govindadas Thakur has sung, Edana yovana putra parijana ite ki ache paratitire kamala dhala jala jivana talamala bhaja hum hari para nitire. In this verse, Srila Govinda Das actually says,
Jai Sisi Radha Gopinath, Nandita Sakhi Devi ki, Jai Lord Jagannath Baladev Subhadra Maharani ki, Sisi Gonitai ki.
In this verse, Srila Govinda Das actually says that there is no bliss in the enjoyment of youthful life. In youth, a person becomes very lusty to enjoy all kinds of sense objects. The sense objects are form, taste, smell, touch, and sound. The modern scientific method or advancement of scientific civilization encourages the enjoyment of these five senses. The younger generation is very pleased to see a beautiful form, to hear radio messages of material news and sense gratificatory songs, to smell nice scents, nice flowers, and to touch the soft body or breasts of a young woman and gradually touch the sex organs. All of this is also very pleasing to the animals. Therefore, in human society, there are restrictions in the enjoyment of the five sense objects. If one does not follow, he becomes exactly like an animal. So this purport has 1, 2, 3, 4 paragraphs. What I would like to do is just do a little bit practice of emphatic listening. We did this one time when one devotee came here. I think his name was Krishna Dharma, and he had his wife with him in the audience, and he was asking his wife to repeat what he just read in the purport, and but in such a way that she would explain in her own words what she heard, what was in the purport. So this is one paragraph, so I will tell myself what I understood in this paragraph, but for the next three paragraphs I will ask one of the audience to, if it's okay with you. If I don't get any answer, then I assume it's okay. So what I understand from this paragraph is that Srila Govinda Das, he's quoting from his song Bhaja Uremana. And this quotation from this song is explaining that there is no bliss in, you know, sense enjoyment. Although it seems very blissful in the, especially when we are very young and when the senses are very strong. There are many objects for sense enjoyment, and especially the sex object. So, but all of this sense enjoyment is based on animal propensities. Animals, they also have this kind of enjoyment. So, as a human being, if they are just engaged in this bodily sensual enjoyment, they're not better than animals. So that's what I understood from the purport. So I will just continue. So please be attentive. Thus, in this verse, it's especially stated, Kama ashmala chetasa. The consciousness of King Puranjan was polluted by lusty desires and sinful activities. In the previous verse, it stated that Puranjan, although advanced in consciousness, lay down on a very soft bed with his wife. This indicates that he indulged too much in sex. The words Navavaya are also significant in this verse. They indicate the period of youth from 16 to 30. These 13 or 15 years of life are years in which one can very strongly enjoy the senses. When When one comes to this age, he thinks that life will go on and that he will simply continue enjoying his senses. But time and tide wait for no man. The span of youth expires very quickly. One who wastes his life simply by committing sinful activities in youth immediately becomes disappointed and disillusioned when the brief period of youth is over. The material enjoyments of youth are especially pleasing to a person who has no spiritual training. If one is trained only according to the bodily conception of life, he simply leads a disappointed life, because bodily sense enjoyment finishes within 40 years or so. After 40 years, one simply leads a disappointed life, because bodily sense enjoyment finishes within 40 years or so. After 40 years, one simply leads a disillusioned life, because he has no spiritual knowledge. For such a person, the expiration of youth occurs in half a moment. Thus, King Puranjan's pleasure, which he took in lying down with his wife, expired very quickly. So, who wants to volunteer? No volunteers? Okay, Madhu.
So, the youthful life from 15 to 30.
It actually says, time and tide wait for no man. So anybody else would like to try? Bhagavati is smiling. Yes. Yes.
He was actually enjoying with his wife for a long time, and that time ran very quickly. So it was just like a moment that the enjoyment was finished.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So that's very required to get a spiritual life in time.
Yes. So this paragraph. Like Prabhupada was saying, he starts with saying that this word from the verse, he takes a Sanskrit word from the verse and explains that Sanskrit. So here also he takes the three words kama, kashmala, chetasa, and he says chetasa is translated as consciousness. So the consciousness of King Puranjan was polluted by kama kashmala. It means, kama means lust, and kashmala means sinful activities. So the chetasa was polluted by kama and kashmala, by lust and sinful activities. And then Prabhupada relates to the previous verse, where Puranjan was described as being very advanced in consciousness. But although he was very advanced in consciousness, because he was associated with his wife and he was lying down on very soft bed, that indicates, Prabhupada says, that he was indulging in too much sense enjoyment, too much sex life. And then Prabhupada again quotes a verse, or a word from the verse, Navavaya. Navavaya means youthful life. So then Prabhupada is describing that what means youthful life means it's from 16 to 30, like Madhu was referring. So he says in this short period of life, the senses are very strong, and because the senses are very strong, in that period of life you're very much inclined into enjoy sense enjoyment. And then he says, but, you know, it's only up to 30, you know. And then he says, actually at 40, it's finished, you know. And because 40 it's finished, one becomes very disappointed, disillusioned, because he cannot enjoy as much anymore as when he was very young. You find many times old people, they speak about, you know, the young time, you know, good old days. So that's what's more or less here. Okay, so we continue, next paragraph. Kama kashmala chetasa also indicates that unrestricted sense enjoyment is not allowed in human form of life by the laws of nature. If one wants to enjoy his senses unrestrictedly, he leads a sinful life. The animals do not violate the laws of nature. For example, the sex impulse in animals is very strong during a certain months of the year. The lion is very powerful. He's very powerful. He's a flesh eater. He's very strong. But he enjoys sex only once a year. Somebody knew that? That the lion only enjoys sex once a year? Some information here. Similarly, according to religious injunctions, a man is restricted to enjoy sex only once a month, after the menstrual period of the wife. And if the wife is pregnant, he is not allowed sex at all. That is the law for human beings. A man is allowed to keep more than one wife because he can enjoy sex with the wife. Because he cannot enjoy sex with the wife when she is pregnant. If he wants to enjoy sex at such time, he may go to another wife who is not pregnant. These are laws mentioned in the Manu Samhita and other scriptures. Someone wants to give it a try, what he heard in this purport, in this paragraph? Actually, he says that actually the animals, they don't violate the laws of nature. They don't have unrestricted sex life. So if a man has unrestricted sense enjoyment, you know, which is against the laws of nature, he places himself even lower than animals. And Prabhupada, he also refers to the Manu Samhita, which is a book which is for Manu, for mankind. And these are the laws, you know, which is, you know, like, you know, we live in a civilization where there are laws. You're going to drive through red light, otherwise you get a fine. So in the human kind society, there's also a law. And if you break the law, you have to be punished for that. So all these laws, they're written in one book, and it's called Manu Samhita. Manu Samhita is written by Manu. So one of the injunctions in the Manu Samhita is that a man is allowed to keep more than one wife, for the reason that if the wife is pregnant, he would be able to enjoy sex with one of his other wives, because it's not allowed to have sex when the wife is pregnant. So now the next last paragraph. These laws and scriptures are meant for human beings. As such, if one violates these laws, he becomes sinful. The conclusion is that unrestricted sense enjoyment means sinful activities. Illicit sex is sex. Illicit sex is sex that violates the laws given in the scriptures. When one violates the laws of the scriptures or the Vedas, he commits sinful activities. One who is engaged in sinful activities cannot change his consciousness. Our real function is to change our consciousness from Kashmala, sinful consciousness, to Krishna, the supreme consciousness, pure consciousness, as confirmed in Bhagavad Gita. Param Brahma, Param Dhamma, Pavitram, Paramam Bhavam. Krishna is the supreme, pure, and if we change our consciousness from material enjoyment to Krishna, we become purified. This is the process recommended by Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu as the process of Cheta Dharpana Marjanam, cleansing the mirror of the heart. Yes, Pus? Or Matajis? I read too quick, or? I read too quick? Can you speak a little bit louder? Can I have an applause? Yeah, thank you very much, Madhu. So, this is what this says. So now I will speak a little bit. I mean, there's 10 minutes left. there are a few verses in the Srimad Bhagavatam which, emphasizes the importance of human life. The human life is very rare. It's described as dulabham, very, very rare. And it's rare because the soul is transmigrating from one body to another. And it takes him many transmigrations to ultimately reach the human form of life. Before he comes to the human form of life, he has to go through 8 million, at least 8 million species of life, you know. And these forms of life, they're not that suitable, you know, or soothing or pleasant as, you know, the human form of life. So he has to go through the, you know, fish life, to the insect life, to the reptile life. You know, you just imagine what it is to be an insect. I mean, you know, you can just imagine what it is to be an insect, to be eaten by some other, you know, reptile or something like that, you know, or a spider is eating the flies or something, you know. Insect life is not very pleasant. So you can just imagine there are 8 million kinds of species, and you have to go through all these different kinds of species, and finally you come to the platform of human form of life, where there is an opportunity to get out of this kind of birth. And if you don't take that opportunity, then you have to go back to the cycle. You have to again, you know, go through the 8 million foreign species of life, and again get your chance to get a human form of life, and then, you know, like that. So therefore it says this human form of life is very rare, and it's also very very potent. Although it's temporary, a human form of life is temporary, but it's very valuable. And because just only by the human form of life, not any other form, one can attain Krishna consciousness. It's actually even in higher planetary systems, if they want to go back to Krishna, they have to take birth in the Bhumi, you know, in the Bhumi Mandala, where there is the earthy planetary systems, to take birth as human form, to go back home, back to Godhead. So it's very, you know, it's in the scriptures, it's very glorified, the human form of life, because by human form of life, one can elevate one's consciousness. There are five different kinds of consciousness. One is this covered consciousness, one is the limited consciousness, and one is the blooming consciousness, and one is the, you know, or it's not, it's the bud consciousness, and one is the blooming consciousness, and one is the full bloom consciousness. So the trees' lives, they are the covered consciousness. They are so much covered that they practically don't feel anything. Right? They're almost like in some kind of coma stage, you know. They don't feel anything. And then you have the restricted consciousness, which is more the animals. Animals, they have a consciousness and they perceive things and they feel things, but it's very much restricted. It cannot go further to a certain limit. They can only go to that limit and not further. But then you come to the bud consciousness, which means it has no restriction. But it's in a bud form, you know, bud. You know, bud is like from a flower. When the flower is closed, that's the bud shape of the flower. But it has the capacity to open. But it's only possible to open when there is enough water and enough sunlight. When it's when it's giving that opportunity. So the human form of life is like that. It has the bud consciousness. And when it comes in contact with Krishna consciousness, it can bloom, right? And come to the full bloom state. And that's full Krishna consciousness. So these five levels of consciousness are there. And this process for Krishna consciousness is to bring us to this full bloom consciousness. And that is done by practicing devotional service, which we read are in ninefold Nava Lakshanam. There are nine processes of devotional service. Prahlad Maharaj in the Bhagavatam, he cites these nine forms. He actually says this to Hiranyakasipu. He says to Hiranyakasipu, Hiranyakasipu asked him, "What did you learn on school? What you know?" He was his father, so he wanted to know. You know, he came from school, and he wanted to know what his son was taught on school. He was, you know, affectionate, and so he asked him. And then Prahlad told him, "Sravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu Smaranam, Pada Sevanam, Archanam, Bandanam, Dasham, Sakyam, Atmani Vedanam." Iti pum sam. He says that this nine process of devotional service is the way to obtain Krishna consciousness. So, and then further, Prahlad Maharaj is explaining that this human form of life is only really is very temporary, but at the same time is very valuable, because one can practice devotional service. So one should take fully use of this human form of life, utilize it fully, even at the very beginning of age. Kaumaram acharet pragyo dharmam bhagavatam iha dulabam manasam jamma. I don't know the last line of the verse. Artanam Brahma. So it says that Tanmanye Idam Uttamam. So this human form of life we waste in many different kinds of ways. Like, for example, when we sleep, we don't really practice Krishna consciousness. When you sleep, you practice Krishna consciousness? No. So how many hours of the day you sleep? Say 6 hours, 7 hours, 8 hours. So that's already gone, wasted. This means like 1/3 of your life is just gone, you know. 1/3 of your life, you cannot practice Krishna consciousness. Then which moments of the day you cannot practice Krishna consciousness? Maybe when you're eating, you know. When you're eating, when you're brushing your teeth, when you take shower, you know. So how much is that? 1 hour you take care of your body? Or maybe more, when you have to put on makeup, or I don't know. When you choose your dress, you go shopping, you can buy your food, you know, you drive there. How much time is that, you know? So much time. So what is left, actually? So there was one Swami in our movement, and he had one disciple, and his disciple asked him how we can properly utilize our time. And then he gave a very nice answer, I found. He split it up the time. A day has 24 hours. So 3 times 8 is 24. So he split it up in 3 times 8. He says you should take 8 hours care for your body, 8 hours care for your spiritual life, and 8 hours care for preaching, means doing good to others. So if you think about it, is it possible, you know? For me it's not possible, but ideal, you know, it would be possible. So we should think about that, how we can try to practice Krishna consciousness as much as we can, you know, in this form of life, because it's very rare, and we should take full opportunity for it. So this is good when we read this kind of things, when we take the Bhagavatam, when we read, we should contemplate it. How can we apply it in our own life? Kamam acharet pragyo. He says archeret. Archeret means practicing. So he says prakyo, one who is intelligent, he should start practicing when he is komaram, already at a very young age. Because we don't know when we die. We don't know when we leave our body. We don't know. So any moment we should try to utilize and try to practice Krishna consciousness as much as we can. And Prabhupada, of course, he instructed us that we should chant 16 rounds, follow four regular principles. So this kind of principles, this is like the basic thing we should do. But besides that, we should endeavor to do more than these basic things. And by endeavoring in that way, Krishna is very much pleased. Krishna is always very pleased if one endeavors more than, you know, than actually he's asking for. It's very common sense. So when we do this extra endeavor, then Krishna is very pleased, and by Krishna's being pleased, we get a lot of mercy. And this mercy we need, because we are mercy cases, especially in this age of Kali Yuga, where there is a lot of distractions in spiritual life. It's not really a favorable situation where we can practice spiritual life. Kalo dosha nide rajan. It's an ocean of faults. But there is one mahagunan, there is one very good quality in this age, and that is kirtanat eva krishna sa mukta sangha param vajat. Just by chanting the holy name of the Lord, doing kirtan, Krishna kirtan, one can liberate himself. So this chanting is a way to like it's said here in the last line of the purport, the conclusion of Prabhupada, that Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has the process of Chetadarpa Marchanam, cleansing the mirror of the heart. This process is recommended. So this is recommended for this age, for our situation where we are at, to chant as much as we can. And we should get habituated to chanting. So when we get habituated to chanting, then we don't have to, do a lot of endeavor. It goes automatically. When you chant your rounds properly and attentively, then you will see after your 16 rounds, you will continue chanting. It's not that when you chant your 16 rounds and then you don't chant anymore. If you chant properly your 16 rounds, then when you put down your beat back, you keep chanting. Somebody has that experience? Yes. So that's actually a proof of your proper chanting. If you chant your 16 rounds and you don't feel like chanting anymore, then the 16 rounds was not properly chanted. If you chant properly your 16 rounds, then you feel like chanting more, or you automatically chant more. There's one incident in the Chaitanya Lila where Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was having a kirtan, and he came in the area where Muslims were ruling, and the Muslim ruler, he found it a disturbance, so he sent one of his government servants to see what's going on. So the man, he went there, and when he came back, he was just chanting because he could not. He was so enchanted by the kirtan that when he came back, he was just Hari Hari Krishna Hari Krishna. So the government was, what is going on with you? I mean, and then he was just explaining that it's so ecstatic, this kirtan. It's just, I don't know, I don't want to chant, but I just chant, you know. It's kind of contagious, you know. If somebody has a disease and you come in his association, you catch his disease. So similarly, when we come in the association of devotees, where there is a lot of taste for chanting, where everybody is chanting, then automatically you also start chanting. So we should keep this chanting, and then we don't fall from this platform. Another example is actually in the Lila of Lord Ram. Lord Ram, he built a bridge over the ocean. So, and on each stone they threw in the ocean, the stone, start floating. So one was inquisitive and was asking why the stones are floating, how is that possible? And then Hanuman was explaining that actually on each stone we write the name Ram. And that was what they were doing. They wrote in each stone, to build the bridge, they wrote the name Ram. And that's why the stones were floating. So similarly, if we keep Ram, if we keep Krishna in our heart, then we will stay floating. We will not sink. We will not fall down. Or we not will not go down to the bottom. It's a material existence. Okay, so thank you for your attention. Maybe somebody has some comments or question. Yes, Marupu. So for those who didn't hear the question is that there is stated that even in the heavenly planets, the higher planets, demigods who live there, like for example in Brahmaloka, all the inhabitants of Brahmaloka, when Brahma goes back to Godhead, then everybody goes with him back to Godhead. And also demigods, Indra, you know, they're all devotees. So, and it's referring to what I said in the class, that you have to take birth in the earth to go back home, back to Godhead. What I was actually referring to is to go back to Goloka Vrindavan. And because to go back to Goloka Vrindavan, you have to come to this earth planet. It's written in the Brihad Bhagavatamrita, where there actually is describes the journey of the soul back home, back to Godhead. And there you see that there is this Sanat Kumar, Gopal Kumar, who is doing this journey, and his journey is described by Sanatan Goswami. And he goes to all the heavenly planets, but ultimately he has to come back to the earth to take birth in the earthly planet, and there, from there, he goes back home, back to the spiritual world. So there it's explained that if we want to go to Goloka Vrindavan, to the spiritual world, we have to come back and take birth again in the earthly planet. Yes, Visakha. Yes.
But isn't it for a devotee, even if you maintain your body, if you use the body for preaching, that is also like counted? It's like everything is included. Or you said eating, but if we take prasadam, so this is also a devotional service. I was a little bit confused.
Okay.
Or if you even go working to maintain a Krishna conscious family, it's not that only sitting in the temple and chanting and reading is like devotional service.
Yes. Okay. Yeah, it depends on what your consciousness is. It's a daily routine, you know. And generally, when you are doing things in a routine kind of way, you know, you don't have that consciousness, you know, which you have by practicing devotional service. So, in general, we don't speak about, you know, devotees who are that elevated, who can keep, you know, who see Krishna everywhere, you know. For those devotees who see Krishna in everywhere, everything and everywhere, whatever they do, you know, is Krishna conscious, you know. But for those who are practicing Krishna consciousness, it's described you have to follow certain rules and regulations. It's Vaidhi Bhakti. And in the Vaidhi Bhakti process, you know, it's we have to engage our body in devotional service. And that takes time, you know, you have to engage your body in devotional service. And it's not like, you know, in the Vaidhi Bhakti platform, it's not described, you know, that taking shower is devotional service. You know, it's, you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
So there are certain rules and regulations and we have to follow, which are sadhana bhakti, which are practicing devotional service. When we are on the level of, you know, full Krishna consciousness, then we also follow the rules and regulations, but anything we do is very Krishna conscious because we are, you know, so much absorbed in Krishna. But when we're not on that level, we should really understand our position, what our position is, you know. And we should understand that when we want to be Krishna conscious, we should associate with devotees, we should come to temple programs, we should chant our fixed number of rounds. We should very be careful that we don't eat anything which is not offered to Krishna. You know, there are certain rules and regulations, and we should be very attentive to that. And that's what I actually want to say. We should be attentive that we don't waste our time. Yeah, we should be careful. But it's true what you're saying. If you have that consciousness, you know, that you see Krishna everywhere, and that you are any moment of the day, you know, you're really like serving Krishna, that's different, you know. But if you're not on that platform, then you should stick to the rules and regulations very very vigorously. Yeah, is that okay? If you want some to cook something for Krishna, yes. You can think like that. If you think like that, it's good. It's good. But generally, you know, if in family life there are certain beslommeringen, you know, how you call this? I don't know how the English word is, you know. Encumbrances. Anyway, certain things, you know, they really drag, you know, drag of life, you know, you have to go through it, you know. I mean, I don't like to go shopping personally. If I go into a supermarket, I rather get my things and get out of there, you know. So I don't see it as devotional service, you know what I mean? You can renounce everything, but you have to be on that platform. If you're not on that platform, you know, you take it as it is, you know. You chose for this responsibility and you have to fill this responsibility, although they're not nice. But you do that out of, you know, moral, ethical codes, you know, you follow. And that's actually what our position is at that stage, you know. Prabhupada explains you have dharma, right? Religious principles. And you have swadharma. And he says swadharma you have the spiritual understanding and the material understanding. Material understanding is that, you know, we fall in certain ashram, certain varna, and we follow the rules of this varna and ashram. But if you are on the spiritual platform, you understand you're a servant of Krishna and you follow that dharma. You know, whatever Krishna tells you, you follow. So, but if you're not on that platform, if you're not on that liberated platform, because that's liberated platform, then you have to follow the rules and regulations given to you according to your position. If you're a Kshatriya, you have to follow the Kshatriya rules. If you're Vaishya, you have to follow Vaishya rules. If you're Grihastha, you have to Grihastha rules. If you're Brahmachari, you follow the Brahmachari rules. These rules and regulations are there for conditioned souls. If you are liberated souls, then, you know, whatever you do, you serve Krishna. Because you understand fully you are a servant of Krishna and what your service is to Krishna. But if you're not on that platform, then you have to follow this, you know, material rules and regulations. Yes, Guru Padmapur.
I was thinking also that regular activities like chanting, hearing, reading, they're special. They're like very necessary for us. And after some time the devotee has to develop a kind of feeling that I don't want to waste any time. I want to spend more time reading, studying, chanting.
Yes.
These activities. And preaching.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And he sees the the other dharma, the other activities, I want to decrease that. Don't waste time in the shower too long. Don't waste time eating too long. Or shopping or whatever. He feels like that. He feels like it's more important to read more, to chat more, because that makes me Krishna conscious. And shopping for hours and trying to think of doing this for the pleasure of Krishna is a dangerous thing.
Okay, so please don't. Please, if you want to say something, you can raise your hand and then. Yes. Okay, he can answer what you said.
We have a mission. There are so many living entities suffering in the material world, and our mission is to do something about it. So if I, instead of 2 hours showering, I do 5 minutes showering, and the other 1 hour and 55 minutes, I can save fallen souls, then that's better.
But then
you're more merciful, more compassionate.
Then you create some distance between the regular people, because people take showers for hours. And if you do fill your head up with information, then finally it ends up with nothing. Because actually you have to make your head empty.
I think it's things where your priority lies, you know? If you yes.
So
you say
you're studying all the time and you put yourself on, I have to study this, I have to do this, I have to do this, then it's going.
No, but that's not what he's saying. He's saying that he prefers to read and to study and to relish what he's reading, and you know, he likes that. He wants to do that. Because he likes that, because he has a taste for that, he likes to diminish his shower and his eating, because he has more taste. So it's just where you put your priorities. If you prefer, you know, to read and study the holy scriptures and, you know, spend more time in that than to take shower, then.
But if you reach this certain spiritual level, I think you will never study, or the magic comes to you. If you look in a window of a shop, if you read a book, if you walk outside, all information comes to you.
But enjoying life.
And certainly, you have to also.
You have to hear, not to teach.
No, we. No, we very much appreciate your comment. We very much appreciate your comment. Thank you very much. Okay, so time is up. Hare Krishna. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Sri Prabhupada ki jai.